Good evening and welcome to Chicago Tonight Latino Voices. I'm Joanna Hernandez on the show tonight.
The city did a really terrible job of handling this.
The mayor drops plans to house migrants at Amundsen Park after facing backlash from residents.
We could take showers, change our clothes, and warm up. They can't.
How local organizations are helping those facing homelessness as temperatures drop.
Besides access to capital, is access to information, right?
And a nonprofit that's helping Chicago's restaurants start up and scale up. And now to some of today's top stories. The world is reacting to the death of former U.S. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. Kissinger served under Presidents Nixon and Ford. You're looking at one of his appearances here on Chicago Tonight from 2001. He was a controversial figure, praised by many in the military and political institutions, and criticized by others for being the architect of policies they believe led to millions of unnecessary deaths around the world. Kissinger died yesterday at the age of 100. The judge in the corruption trial of former Chicago Alderman Ed Burke denies a request for a mistrial. Burke's lawyers requested the mistrial after a witness made a statement calling the former alderperson corrupt. They urged the statement prejudice the jury. However, Judge Virginia Kendall didn't agree, saying she was confident the jury would heed her instruction to ignore the statement. Burke faces 14 criminal charges, including racketeering, bribery, and extortion. For more details on today's testimony in the case, visit our website. Illinois State Police are rolling out an initiative to help root out public corruption. People can now file complaints about suspected corruption, such as wire fraud and money laundering, privately through the agency's online portal. Police officials say having allegations reported to one place will streamline the process and allow for a quicker response. ISP says it will then direct submissions to the proper agency to handle the investigation. Get ready for Fast and Furious Round 2 as NASCAR returns to the streets of Chicago. Today, they released the 2024 course map for the race. It looks similar to last year's circuit. The street race will once again take place in Grand Park in July. Next year's race will mark the second of a three-year contract between the city of Chicago and NASCAR. Now, if you don't want to get towed, listen up. Chicago's winter overnight parking ban begins in just a few hours. Cars parked on certain marked streets will be towed from 3 a.m. to 7 a.m., whether there is snow on the ground or not. And be warned, violators face a minimum of $150 towing fee, a $60 ticket, and a storage fee of $25 per person per day. Excuse me, you don't want to be that person, I mean. Up next, an update on the city's efforts to move migrants out of police stations. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
For the first time in more than 4 months, there are fewer than 1,000 migrants sleeping on the floors of police stations and at O'Hare Airport, as Mayor Brandon Johnson's efforts to move migrants into city-run shelters begins to show progress. WTTW News reporter Heather Sharon joins us now with more. Heather, there's a lot to get to. Now, bring us up to date on what Mayor Brandon Johnson has said is a humanitarian crisis. How many migrants is the city currently caring for?
So there are about 800 migrants in police stations across the city. That is significantly less than just 3 weeks ago, when more than 3,000 migrants were sleeping at police stations and at O'Hare. Now at O'Hare, there are about 100 migrants, but the real issue is the 13,200 migrants that are in city-run shelters. That is by far an all-time high.
How to move them, of course. Now, what has caused a drop in the number of migrants at police stations?
So there are two things happening. One, the number of buses arriving every day from Texas, paid for by Republican Governor Greg Abbott, has dropped. As the weather has gotten colder, fewer migrants want to come north to Chicago, and perhaps they're hearing that Chicago doesn't have much space for them. The other thing is that Mayor Brandon Johnson is really stepping up efforts to open more shelters. There are now 25 city-run shelters, and he's also ramped up an effort with 17 local churches who are housing migrants themselves in an attempt to give them a warm place to sleep and to help them get back on their feet.
Now, there was news today about the mayor's plans to open a migrant shelter in the Fieldhouse in Amundsen Park, which drew an intense backlash from nearby residents. Now, will it be moving forward?
It will not. Because of that drop and that increased ability to get migrants into other city shelters, the mayor and Alderman Chris Taliaferro said that that shelter would no longer be needed, along with other plans to convert a nearby commercial building to a shelter for migrants. That was a huge relief to residents of Austin who see that Fieldhouse as an important community hub, and were furious when FARC district programs were delayed or moved to make room for the migrants.
And they've been waiting to get that Fieldhouse back.
Yes.
Now, Heather, what's the latest on the so-called winterized base camp in Brighton Park?
So that base camp is now fully under construction. However, it is over the objections of Alderman Julio Ramirez, who says that she is not convinced that it is safe for migrants to live on that site after the discovery of toxic metals. Now, earlier this week, I asked Mayor Brandon Johnson, why start building the camp before that full environmental report was released? He said we'll have that report by the end of the week. So that means I'm looking for something in my inbox tomorrow.
To read, of course. And what about plans for a second base camp in Roseland? Can you tell me about that?
Those plans are still moving forward. The city has not started construction there. Unlike the Brighton Park base camp, that is going to be something that will be run entirely by the city while the state is running the plan or plan to run the camp in Brighton Park. There are still environmental assessments going on that land in Roseland, which the city now owns. So hopefully the city hopes will be a little bit of a smoother process there.
There's a lot to keep up with.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Heather, for your report.
Thanks, Joanna.
And you can read Heather's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. Up next, how local organizations are helping those facing homelessness. Winter in Chicago can be brutal, and even worse for those experiencing homelessness. A Latino Muslim organization is working to help those in need on the city's southwest side.
It's a frigid night in Chicago. A group of volunteers work together to pack up warm chicken noodle soup.
We're going to be out here for a few, like maybe 2 hours, and we're going to be freezing, and then we get to go back into our car and feel the warmth. But it's the realization that these folks that are out here, they don't have that opportunity to just go and get in a warm car or get under warm blankets.
It's an initiative operated by the Latino Muslim Ojala Foundation.
The neighborly deeds came about in my kitchen, and we started out making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. We went out and we handed out, and we ran out of food, and we always run out of food because the need is so big. We said we'll be back next week.
We ask Allah to reward you for that, and we hope that, you know, you take something home with you every time that you come out.
The first stop is an encampment under a bridge. That's where we meet 61-year-old Yolanda Velasquez.
I was doing so good before my father passed away, working at Potbelly's. I lost my job. I went to a depression. I lost my apartment. I'm sleeping in a tent. I'm homeless.
For the last 5 months, the Chicago native says she's been sleeping on the streets, and getting help has been challenging.
They're telling me that I'm not qualified anymore because they're giving all the benefits to the Venezuelans. I understand they need help too, but they're forgetting about the people that pay taxes in Chicago that live here, and we are homeless just like they are.
With temperatures dropping, Velasquez says she's desperate to find a warm space.
So I kind of look forward every Friday to be here, at least to get whatever I can. Anything helps me right now.
It's a calling close to one of the members of the foundation.
It's very personal. Like some of the closest people to me, you know, they found themselves in this situation and they didn't quite make it.
Abrigo, sopa, ¿quieres sopa?
Raúl González doesn't shy away from telling his story about how he found his devotion to Islam. A journey, he says, has led him to give back.
I have a very hard past, very, very hard past.
and I needed peace. I was always, you know, into stuff. I was always into trouble. I went to the penitentiary. You know, I did a lot of time in prison. And always angry, always looking for family. That's my family now, Ojala Foundation.
Every Friday, you'll find Gonzalez and a group of volunteers not only passing out a warm meal, but also spreading the faith of Islam.
These people are no different. This could be any one of us. You know, we're all like one really bad day away from finding ourselves in such a desperate situation.
The Neighborly Needs Initiative has been running for 6 years on donations. If you want to learn more about the organization and how you can help, we have all that information on our website. And in other efforts to fight homelessness, Chicagoans can expect to vote in March election on a proposal known as Bring Chicago Home. The measure would hike taxes on the sales of properties worth $1 million or more. According to the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless, an estimated 68,000 people were homeless in Chicago, up 2,800 from the year before. But we should note these numbers are from 2021, which means those don't account for the thousands of asylum seekers who started arriving in 2022. Now, joining us now with more on all this are Salvador Serra, Director of Community Impact and Special Projects at La Casa Norte, Arturo Hernandez, a senior attorney with the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless, and Bruce Perry with the Illinois Union of the Homeless. Thank you all for joining us. Now, Arturo, I want to start with you. Okay. Your team's report, which just today became available in Spanish, also found that out of Latino Chicagoans experiencing homelessness, 91% are in doubled-up situations. Can you explain what that exactly means?
Yes, sure. So people experience homelessness in different ways. They could be at shelters, on the street, or doubled-up, which some people consider couch surfing. Doubled up is a form of homelessness. So this is when someone is staying at someone's house where they have no legal right to be at, and they can be asked to leave at any time. So they don't have their own house, their own apartment. They might be staying with a relative or a friend, but they don't have the right to be there. So they can be asked to leave at any time.
They don't have their own space.
Correct.
Salvador, your group works a lot with Latino youth. Can you expand on the need you're currently seeing and what that looks like?
You know, there's never enough. And we are, our organization focuses on youth overall and their families who are either homeless or experiencing the danger of being homeless. We also provide wraparound services and programs and services to help them get out of the situation. Yes, there are a lot of needs. There are a lot of organizations like ours that are supporting, but it's never enough.
And I want to ask, a lot of the population of asylum seekers who are arriving, they are young people.
Yes.
Have you received them and helped them as well?
We are indirectly helping. We are providing rental assistance through our organization to the asylum seekers. You know, but we have to understand that we're dealing with a human rights issue. It's regardless of race, ethnicity, background, gender, sexual orientation, and immigration status, we need to address it. Homelessness overall.
Overall. Bruce, I want to go to you. As someone who has experienced homelessness before, how dangerous is it to be living outside in this kind of weather?
Oh, it's totally dangerous. It's a brutal existence at any time. But in this kind of weather, people, we literally have had a veteran freeze to death in the winter in Chicago. I mean, I know one that I can name, Wayne Warren. And, you know, so this is extremely important that we get everyone housed as soon as possible. I want to point out that next week, the 10th of December, is the 75th anniversary of the UN Declaration of Human Rights that encompasses everything that's just been said about everyone has the right to housing and to the other basic services. And we are not experiencing that at this time. Our organization is out there trying to organize the homeless in their own defense. And of course, we go through other organizations to get as many people housed as possible. But the need is growing. The number of encampments are growing, and we work mainly in tent cities and encampments. The number of encampments is growing. The number of people in each encampment is growing.
And Bruce, I can hear the passion in your voice. I want to go to something real quick. We heard earlier the story of Yolanda, who experienced homelessness for the first time and didn't have a good experience in a shelter. She's been searching for help, but says that she's been having trouble finding it.
I understand they need help too, but they're forgetting about the people that pay taxes in Chicago that live here, and we are homeless just like they are. And now I'm reaching for help, you know, for the first time, and they're turning me down.
Bruce, I want to go quickly to you again. How difficult is it to navigate the emergency shelter system? Many are saying that it's overcrowded.
It is overcrowded. There is no question about that. And therefore, the shelter system is not the only way to get people into housing. But many people without documentation or people that do not have the appropriate IDs and documentation, even if they are documented in the sense of being in the U.S., cannot find housing because of their documentation status. And we have to go through that process. For instance, to get a birth certificate, you need an ID. To get an ID, you need a birth certificate. We have to deal with ridiculous...
So sometimes there's many barriers and layers, you're saying.
Exactly.
Arturo, going to you, many of your clients experience homelessness. What barriers are there when it comes to securing housing?
Well, as mentioned, one of the barriers is not having an ID. So there could be another barrier, such as having a criminal record. So I'm an attorney with the Law Project of the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless, and we provide free legal services to people who are at risk of homelessness, have housing instability. And we have attorneys that represent clients in a variety of areas, public benefits cases, ceiling expungement, family law. And we also do outreach at shelters and in the community to inform people of our legal services and also their legal rights.
And what we just heard, Yolanda, her case is, you know, many people experience that. How would you help someone like her?
Well, they can call and do an intake, and we can assess whether it's a type of case that we can provide legal assistance for, or if not, maybe we can try to refer them to another organization that might be able to help them.
And as we know, Chicago's housing crisis has been magnified by the thousands of asylum seekers who are seeking shelter themselves. Salvador, we talked a little bit about that. What has the situation taught us about the city's housing crisis?
You know, I think that it was way overdue to bring the issue of homelessness to the spotlight. Everybody's doing whatever they can to help. Government is doing it. Non-for-profit organizations have gone on and beyond doing the work to assist the issue. But this is not, homelessness didn't start with the asylum seekers. There was homelessness before, and the attention now is being brought up. So that needs to be very clear. There are a lot of needs, and I want to just say something that was mentioned just earlier. The first step on trying to address the issue of homelessness for an individual is seeking the assistance, making the phone call to the organizations like our organizations. We have a drop-in center where youth can come and receive assistance if they feel themselves that they are either homeless or in the brink of becoming homeless.
Is it common that sometimes people feel they don't know where to go to?
It is common, but there's also a perception that, you know, why should I go if nothing's going to be done? The first step is trying to get the assistance. And organizations like the Casa Norte that provides different resources, not just housing or temporary housing or permanent housing, overnight housing, but also food, health services, an array of services, case management, an array of services.
And again, not to create a divide between what's happening with the asylum seekers and people who are facing homelessness. Arturo, I want to go to you. How do you think the amount of new arrivals will impact the state of homelessness in the city?
Well, we already are in a crisis. As mentioned, the data from 2021 shows us that we have a little bit over 68,000 people experiencing homelessness. And what we need is permanent housing and supportive services. So CCH, along with a lot of other organizations, have been working on the Bring Chicago Home campaign, which will now be a ballot question in the March primary. And the Chicago voters will be able to decide whether we should have a dedicated revenue stream to provide permanent housing and supportive services. And I think that's going to be a great step forward.
You're trying to be hopeful. Bruce, we only have time for one last question here. The crisis, of course, I just mentioned, has been creating a divide in our city. Why do you think people are really upset, and what do you really, and what do you try to tell them?
We try to tell them that unity is the path to solving the problems. And the divide occurs because some money is given to one group and another group feels deprived. But the fact of the matter is that we are, as has been said, we are dealing with homelessness across many different groups, and they're all in the same boat, so to speak.
Well, thank you so much for everyone's input. Our thanks to Salvador Serra, Arturo Hernandez, and Bruce Perry. Up next, a restaurant center on a mission to help entrepreneurs. That's right after this. Chicago's restaurants are more than just places to eat. They're the heartbeat of communities, defining neighborhood cultures through cuisine. But the restaurant industry is also one of the toughest to succeed in. And that's why Pilsen Nonprofit began its mission to help restaurant entrepreneurs keep those food favorites coming. Producer Erica Gunderson brought us this story. Here's another look.
Like most Friday afternoons, it's busy in the kitchen at Ruby's Tacos on 18th Street.
Because they're 100% family owned and operated, and they represent all the very necessary pieces of a successful restaurant.
But it wasn't that long ago that Ruby's Tacos were only available once a week at a Maxwell Street stand. Since then, the Ramirez family, who owns Ruby's, has successfully transitioned into this brick-and-mortar location. That's thanks in large part to Dish Roulette Kitchen, who shares the space with Ruby's, at least for now.
Story when we met Ruby's, they were street vendors. They started selling tamales and tortas out of a cooler at like different soccer matches throughout the city. And when we met them, they had a really impressive taco stand.
Pandemic forced them into an apartment, selling out of their apartment. We took them, put them in a physical space that supported their revenue streams and everything in between.
Dish Roulette Kitchen was started by restaurant industry veteran Jackson Flores and her friend Brian Soto when Flores lost her job early in the pandemic.
I was working a really sweet gig as a restaurant operator, and Brian owns and operates a accounting firm.
Yeah, so I was a CPA running my accounting firm. I have a lot of food and beverage clients, so during the pandemic, I saw them struggling when they had to shut down their doors.
Soto and Flores self-funded a microgrant program as a way to quickly help struggling spots. Soon, outside funders began contributing too. That funding has allowed them to distribute over $80,000 in microgrants to date, as well as offer free business education and ongoing support to aspiring and current restaurateurs.
And you'd be surprised the amount of people that open restaurants with no experience, a little bit of capital, an idea. And we've helped entrepreneurs through or navigate the ins and outs of zoning permits and licenses. But I do feel like before you make, will help you figure out what success looks like for you.
I think the biggest problem in the entrepreneur landscape right now is just, besides access to capital, is access to information, right? And what does sales tax mean? What taxes am I exposed to? What permits and licenses am I exposed to? How do I cost out my menu? How do I have inventory controls? How do I work QuickBooks?
The Dish Roulette Kitchen team says they see supporting entrepreneurs like the Ramirez family throughout all phases of their businesses as a way to build stronger communities.
Folks coming from diverse backgrounds and experiences, we don't know where to go to help sometimes. And sometimes it's actually really hard for us to even ask for help. And so part of those pieces are breaking down those barriers. So when they are looking for resources, it is something that they feel comfortable about.
They're in, a lot of times, in underserved communities. And what they bring to those communities is not just, you know, their skills, their food, their craft, but it's also jobs, and they're really like economic engines in all of these communities.
And Flores and Soto say they only need to look to their roommates, Ruby's, to see evidence their approach works.
Ruby's has been our best case study. It shows that someone could come here to America, start some little taco stand, and grow it into a full-fledged business, hiring, you know, 10 plus people and having their family on a salary. And that is true success.
A dream.
For Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, this is Erica Gunderson.
These stories always make me so hungry, but what a great program. I hope they're doing well. And Ruby's Tacos is up for a Jean Bonnier Award for Heritage Restaurant of the Year. Dish Roulette Kitchen offers classes and support free of charge to restaurant entrepreneurs. You can find more on that on our website. What a great initiative. And that's our show tonight. Be sure to check out our website, WTTW.com/news, for the very latest from WTTW News. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for the weekend review. Now, from all of us here at Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, I'm Joanna Hernandez. Stay healthy, stay safe. Buenas noches.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is committed to supporting diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives throughout the legal profession.